You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsoccer.com, powered by LWOS Incorporated, the Beautiful Game Network, Roughneck Scarves, and Golden Goal Press. We've got a very special show for you tonight. We're going to be touching on a few things MLS-related in the roundtable, but as I bring in one of our occasional co-hosts, Rachel McCrigger. Rachel, we are here to talk about all things Women's World Cup. We are just days away from the games and the tournament kicking off in France. Are you pumped? Because I'm pumped.
I am so pumped because women's soccer is great. It is awesome. It is, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but it is badass. And I am so excited for France because it is, oh, I'm so excited.
Yes, excellent. Okay, we'll let the profanity go. Apologies, listeners, for those who were offended by Rachel's level of excitement and the words associated with that. But I'm excited as well, Rachel. I think this could be the best and I think the most competitive Women's World Cup in the history of the tournament. Obviously a big deal with U.S. Women's National Team being in the tournament, already at levels that the Men's National Team was not for 2018 in Russia. But we've also got a lot of other really interesting stuff to talk about. So let's get into it because this is a fantastic tournament and I'm just excited to have you on the show and pick your brains about, a tournament that I definitely want to be up to snuff on by the time it kicks off. So let's start off with a little bit of the news of the day. I know there were kind of some injuries going into the She Believes Cup, and now there were some concerns in the last couple of tune-up games regarding Tobin Heath, who I am full on the Tobin Heath bandwagon. And you've got Julie Ertz, Mewis, and then also Rodriguez. Where are the Lady Yanks as far as health right now? Is there any concern going into their first group stage game?
I think there's always going to be concern going into that midfield. Rose Lavelle hasn't always been healthy. Lindsay Horan's coming off an ankle injury. She sat out for the She Believes Cup. Tobin Heath she's fine. She's ready to go. She is totally in the swing of things, and she is nutmegging people like you've never seen her nutmeg before. That midfield is a little shaky, like I said, but I mean, there's depth there. That's why they brought Morgan Bryan in, although she got picked over McCall Zerboni, which was it was an iffy decision by Jill Ellis, but you've got a real powerhouse in Sam Mewis, who is the tallest player ever in U.S. Women's National Team history, and she managed to score a few goals in the tune-up game. That midfield is going to be exciting to watch. I hope Rose Lavelle and Lindsay Horan can stay healthy. That front three is phenomenal. Age doesn't slow Megan Rapinoe and Tobin Heath down, and then, of course, you have Alex Morgan in the middle. Defense, you got to put under a microscope a little bit. There's some health concerns there. Kelly O'Hara has only played in a couple NWSL games with the Utah Royals, who are on top of the NWSL. Actually, I lied. Washington is there now in second, but they've been switching on and off for a while. So Kelly O'Hara being on that right, it's a little bit of a precautionary, but that's why they brought everyone's favorite Allie Krieger and back from no man's land of 2 years of not being called up to the national team. Boom, she gets a world call up. So it'll be interesting to see how the team does.
Let's talk about things going on with the defense. As we talked about, obviously this is a team that is more likely to outscore you. You've been to a couple of their warm-up games. I was at the match here in Denver at DSG Park, home of the Rapids, where they, beat Australia, but by a score of 5-3. So this is a team that will score three goals. If they're winning games, it could be 3-2 rather than the 1-0s of, say, the mid-90s or even the early 2000s. And as we were speaking before we hit the record button, the women's group, the U.S. women's group, isn't that strong, unlike in tournaments past. You've got Thailand, that's not a very good team, and then also Chile and Sweden. So I'm a little concerned about the defense. I'm also concerned that maybe an easy group might make for a little bit of a shock when they face some real competition in a potential quarterfinal. What's going on with things at the back line? Obviously no Hope Solo in this World Cup. And how do you see them approaching group? I believe they're in Group F, as in Frank, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. I think it's interesting. You're always going to hear Hope Solo's name at the World Cup. Poor Alyssa Nayer, she's always going to be in Hope Solo's shadow. You're going to hear the whispers, oh, Hope Solo could have saved that and whatnot. I think the frustrating part for me is, you know, tune-up games are fantastic, but you had tune-up games against South Africa, New Zealand, and Mexico, and no opposing team scored in any of these matches. So that defense wasn't getting tested at all, really. And so they're playing their first group stage games, Thailand's first, and the first and only time they ever play Thailand in Columbus, it was a score of 9-0. And I know you know who won that game. And then Chile, they play them second. They beat them 3-0 and 4-0 respectively already at the end of last year. So those are going to be squeaky clean wins if everything goes right and there are no red cards and whatnot. But you know, it's the World Cup. Anything can happen. Sweden is going to be the wake-up call. These two have a ton of history. They played against each other in the group stage in 2015. Everyone remembers the Olympics, how Sweden knocked out the United States, Hope Solo's comments, which ultimately got her cast to no man's land. That's going to be the biggest, toughest task. That match is going to be likely who decides the winner of the group. Because if Sweden wins, and this is all saying Sweden wins their first two games as well, because they have the ability to also put up probably 9 goals against Thailand. It'll be interesting to watch that final match, and all eyes are going to be glued to the TV to see who is going to be the champion, who is going to extract revenge. Because there's revenge on both sides. Sweden wants revenge for the Hope Solo comp. They want revenge from when the United States beat them back in Sweden. I think that was in 2017, and Rose Lavelle scored. The United States wants revenge because they lost in the Olympics. There is a lot riding on that game before we can even think about the knockout round for the United States.
Absolutely, Rachel. And just to clarify one thing for you all listeners, that Sweden-US game will be the last game of the group stage as well. So it literally will decide it in the sense that you could have two teams going on with 6 points, or, you know, maybe you'd have one team with 6 and one team with 4, and that'll be a straight head-to-head, nobody caring about what's going on between Chile and Thailand when they play on the other side simultaneously with the U.S. Let's stay in Scandinavia for a moment, Rachel. This is some old news, but we haven't gotten a chance to talk about it on this pod, and I think it's especially relevant given that because of this, Norway is not going to be a major factor in this World Cup. Ada Hegerberg, the defending women's Golden Ball Ballon d'Or champion from the Norwegian national team, is sitting out of this World Cup. She is doing it on moral grounds regarding women's equality in the group, in the game of soccer, and then also particularly on the financial side as well. And she's already kind of been making some stance, you know, I don't want to use the hashtag nasty woman, maybe, but we'll say hashtag feminism for sure. When she received her Golden Ball Award, she was asked by the host of the award show to twerk, and she had a pretty sassy and I think appropriate comment, and then got some props on Twitter for that. Talk about this overall decision, and what does that mean for the tournament, and then also Norway probably going out in the group stage because of it.
I think it's a decision that the U.S. players should have looked at too. Granted, you're not going to have your whole U.S. women's national team sit out from the tournament, but obviously they have their own lawsuit against the federation. Ada Hegerberg, she is really stepping up and showing that she means business. Norway is definitely going to miss her. They have some good talent on their team, but there's only one Ada, and she plays so well in France with Lyon. She does so well in the Champions League. I believe she had a hat trick in the recent UEFA Women's Champions League final against Barcelona, where they 4-1, I believe. It's going to be a big loss for Norway. They don't have the easiest group. I think, you know, France, I think they're pretty much punched in to go through. I think it's going to come down really between Norway and Nigeria for that final spot. But also South Korea is a team to not sleep on either. They made it to the knockout rounds in 2015 as well. They're kind of a sleeper team, the underdogs, if you will. So I think Norway still has a chance. But I think there needs to be a lot more media focus on Ada, because, you know, in the United States, we're giving the women their press for their lawsuit, but there's really nobody is risking more right now than Atta Hegerberg, because she is the biggest face right now in soccer on a global scale, and she is sitting out of the biggest tournament of the year. And I think that is much more of a powerful statement than putting up a couple of Nike billboards in New York City. I think I would have been a little more impressed, so to say, if some U.S. players would have done that, but I can understand why they're not doing it. I think it's an interesting decision, and I wish her all the best, and I hope it works out for her in the end.
Yeah, and I'm a little surprised that this hasn't gotten more traction. You know, maybe it wasn't at the time because of when the decision was made. You know, it's not like she made this decision yesterday, for example. But, you know, if 3 months out from the World Cup last summer, Messi or Ronaldo spontaneously, you know, stand up and say, hey, I'm sitting out of the World Cup because, and, you know, pick any one of the reasons why it would be relevant to, you know, to want to stick it to FIFA as far as some of the various, you know, human rights violations and lack of equality and corruption and all the other horrible things that entity stands for. You know, if Messi were to say, you know, I'm sitting out the World Cup unless you pay the women as much money in 2019 as the men are getting in 2018, that would be the only thing that you would talk about, you know, especially given where those two players would stand in terms of their respective team. Like, you couldn't have an actual conversation or any media availability with any of the Portuguese national team or the coaches or players without that being the sole focus of it. And I imagine that that's still going to be relevant or something to talk about as things go along with the coverage of Norway. Maybe not in the context of the entire tournament because there are bigger teams than Norway and there are still other players who are, you know, very significant, certainly at the table with Ada in ways that, you know, we were probably still thinking that, you know, it was going to be definitely a Messi Ronaldo being, you know, the two best players in the Men's World Cup in Russia last summer. But enough about the men. Let's get into talking to one of the teams I'm really excited to see, Rachel. Watching them in the She Believes Cup, I thought England was very, very impressive. Got a good result against the United States at Foxborough, if I'm not mistaken. Not one of the favorites, but maybe one of the dark horses. What are you seeing in the three Lionesses?
Well, what I really like is Fran Kirby. I think she's really kind of broken out into this incredible national team player for them. Jodie Taylor with Rain FC, she only has 40 appearances but 17 goals. They have a really good group of strikers. Tony Duggan's in there, Ellen White, Beth Mead. There is a lot of talent on this team, and their defense is really, really solid. Very young, too. There's like a mid-20s age. There's only one player, Steph Houghton, who is over the age of 30, and she's the captain of the team. There's a lot of English club representation. There's only two players from the NWSL, Jodie Taylor, as I mentioned, and Rachel Daly, who, she might not quite be a starter. She might be in a couple games. They have a pretty standard group. Them, Scotland, who are in their first ever Women's World Cup. I believe Argentina's also in their first World Cup. I think their biggest, opponent is going to be Japan, and I think that's going to be a really interesting match because they played against each other in that She Believes final with England lifting the trophy. So I think Japan's kind of eyeing for a little bit of revenge on that one. They made it to the third place match back in 2015, so you know they got that taste of a bronze medal and they want the gold. So they have a good chance. I think it would be interesting to see how they do. They have a pretty easy group, so I think really, really watching them in the knockout rounds is going to be fun. But I think that Scotland game, I think that's going to be really fun to watch.
Rachel, you are the perfect guest / semi-regular co-host on the show because you provide excellent segues. So let's get into talking about Japan. I remember a time, granted, when I was still much younger in life and in my coverage and understanding and watching of the game. And pretty regularly, you could go into the World Cup, the Women's World Cup, and it would be the United States, and it would be pick whichever the second best team or the biggest threat to the U.S. Women's National Team. And if you put those two in a pool, and it was those two favorites or the field, you would take those two. You know, in 2015, I would say it was certainly Canada was up there, albeit as the host, and obviously the NWSL Cassell has been a major influence, had a major influence on the Canadians women's national team, the Lady Canucks. I'm struggling with the naming nicknames in terms of going from the male to female version, but in any case, Japan was in there in the late 90s. Then obviously they had the, you know, the big penalty shootout against the U.S. women's as well. Now they're a little bit older and they're not being talked about as much. Do you see Japan as a dark horse? They're going to be a threat, or this is a team that maybe is going to give England some trouble for 70 minutes and that's about it?
Japan's in a really interesting spot this year. They're really looking internal. They have, out of their 23 players on this roster, there are only two outside of the Japanese league. That's Rumi Yutsugi, who's playing for Reign FC, and then we have Saki Kumgai, who is playing for Lyon, which is obviously a big deal because Lyon is the dominant of all dominant forces in Europe. But 2019 has been really interesting for Japan because they played in the Shiba Leafs. They had a couple friendlies in April, and they're really only doing one tune-up game before the World Cup, and that was a draw against Spain. This year, they only won one game in 2019, and that was in the Shiba Leafs Cup against Brazil. They drew with the United States, and they lost to England. They lost to England 3-0, so that's going to be a really interesting game to watch. The host and Japan, they battled one time in April, so that resulted in a 3-1 loss. France taking the W on that one. It's just been a really rocky year for Japan. And right now, I think, you know, you said that they have some older players on their team, and that's definitely true. They are extremely young, though. Their goalkeeper with the most caps has 27 appearances. And then they have another one with 14 and another one with 2. All of them play in the Japan League. This is a team that is really relying on some of these youth players to make their mark. There are some players with over 100 caps, but then there's a huge gap. It's, you know, players who have 25, 15, 18 caps, and it's just, there's a big shift. You do have those veteran players, but there's really no in between. It's old, it's young. It's going to be interesting to watch them gel together. I still think that they're in the process of kind of getting their program on the tracks. They went from being ultimate force. They won in 2011. They were the runners up in 2015. And then also they played in the Olympics in the final against the United States in 2012. So it's right now they're coming off of this. We were at the top and now we're kind of learning how to rebuild to get back to the top. And I think going back to the first point, when we started this show, the world is catching up right now. And teams like, you know, England, Scotland, Brazil, all of these teams, they weren't at the level of the United States, the Japan, the France. And now these underdog teams like Australia and New Zealand, they're coming up and they're really pushing and putting Japan a little bit down the chart. So I think Japan has a lot to fight for in this World Cup. I think it's going to be really interesting to watch them to see how they do. You're always going to hear about the success of that 2011, of that 2015 team. But this team, especially those younger players, are saying, hey, it's our time now. We're going to go into France. We're going to give it everything we've got. I wouldn't guarantee them a spot out of their group, but I think their chances are pretty well. They haven't played Scotland this year. They haven't won against England this year. I think there's a lot to fight for right now for Japan.
Let's move on to another favorite. We have France, who will obviously be hosting. If we're going by the Vegas odds that I was telling you about, Rachel, before we started the show, they actually have France at the is the actual favorite. The points and the numbers won't mean anything to you, but it's a very large negative number means that you are likely to win, and a very large positive number means that you are not likely to win. So, for example, Thailand, for example, is listed at plus 10,000, and there's no other team that's listed at more than plus 6,000. The U.S. women's national team is listed at negative 500, and then the France is listed at negative 550. So obviously France may be a slight favorite over the U.S. women's. We were speaking before we hit the record button, and it is possible for the United States and for France to meet at the quarterfinal, I believe in Paris, in the knockout stages in the quarterfinals. What do you make of France in this tournament? How much of their favoritism or people liking them to win the whole thing is a function of their growth over the last two World Cup cycles vis-a-vis them just being the host?
Oh my God, this is such a fun team to watch. I love watching France. And yes, I even loved watching France when they beat the United States in the beginning of the year. This is a team that is looking and seeing that their men won last year. They saw Notre Dame ascend. It didn't completely burn down, but it burned. And they are going to do their best to be the first team in Women's World Cup history to win, to have their men win in 2018 and then have themselves win in 2019. And I think it's a real possibility, and I think France might actually be able to do it. If that does happen and they do meet the United States and France in the quarterfinal, I'm a little bit worried for the United States. They played in the beginning of the year back in January in Le Havre, and France walloped the United States 3-1. That was such a terrible game from the United States defense that I watched that match, and I was like, what is this team right now? And everyone was like, it's time for full panic mode for the United States. But we don't care about them right now. We care about France. And France has had a great 2019. They didn't get too cocky, didn't really do anything flashy. They won their games. They lost one game against Germany. That's fine. Whatever. Bounce back during the World Cup if you're able to face them again. Leah Schuller had the one goal. They won against teams like Uruguay, Japan, Denmark, Thailand, and China. And to have all of those warm-up games against such good opponents. Denmark might not be going to the World Cup. Uruguay might not be going to the World Cup, but they have good teams and they were close to getting to the World Cup. Play against such teams with good talent, that's how you're gonna get better. And that's how you're gonna really prove yourself and test your team. So you're ready to face those other teams that are also qualified for the World Cup. Their first match is against South Korea, and then they'll be playing against Nigeria and Norway, of course. I think France is going to cruise through their group stage. I think they're going to cruise through their first round of the knockout rounds, and I think if they face the United States, they might have a little bit more competition than last time, especially since the United States might have a couple players who were injured return. But it's going to be, I hope that happens, because it's going to be such a good match, and I just don't think the United States is going to beat France. I think France is going to have so much momentum from the fact that they're hosting, from the fact that they want to prove that they can be the double team, men, women, winning 2 years in a row. I really don't think any team can beat France right now, and I'm actually hoping that they win, because I think it would be cool to see that double happen.
Good stuff, Rachel. Last big question that I have for you, and then we'll get to some rapid-fire stuff before we close out the segment. You've obviously been covering and paying attention to the NWSL for a number of years now, and at least I and my peripheral have noticed gradual improvements in the women's game at the club level. Obviously, the U.S. got on the map from a women's soccer perspective because of Title IX and all of that infrastructure it made that was provided to female college athletes in the United States that nowhere anywhere else in the world remotely has, let alone women having rights in some parts of the world. And then now we've seen other countries come up, and a lot of that has been a function of club soccer. Surprise, if you make every single Premier League team have a women's women's club team, and then also have them put in infrastructure and investments to that. Carly Lloyd's going to go over and have access to all the stuff on the Manchester City campus, and she's absolutely going to kill it. You talked a lot about everything going on with Lyon as well, and then obviously some of the other leagues around. Not just in an NWSL context, how much is the gradual improvement and investment and raising of the level of women's club soccer internationally, how much of that has impacted to the point where we have possibly one of the best, you know, fields in the history of the Women's World Cup?
Well, this tournament is so wide open because of how many different players do go to different places. I mean, you have, granted the circumstances were a bit wonky, but Christian Prest went over to Sweden for a little bit last. Sweden is kind of the hot spot right now for women's soccer. cheaper because the pay is better than NWSL. The competition is obviously a little bit higher because you're in Europe. A lot of NWSL draft picks went there instead of going to their granted. A lot of them were from Sky Blue, but they still decided to go, and they could say whatever they want, but a lot of people know it was because, hey, Sky Blue isn't what it is. But I think Europe is really setting the standard still for women's soccer. The United States has a long way to go, but they're getting there. More expansion teams are coming. Amanda Duffy just said that there could be one in 2020. There is a long way to go. I mean, you still have the Reggae Girls from Jamaica being sponsored, and their finances coming from Bob Marley's daughter. So there's a lot of question marks still. There's a lot of question marks to how can the men start helping out more. I've noticed recently a lot of the Russian men's national team players are really supporting the World Cup, which is crazy because their team isn't even in it, but they're still doing it, and you hardly see players from Argentina and Spain really endorsing their women on social media platforms. I saw MLS put out something the other day with like asking the players who they were rooting for, which was really cool. But the level of women's soccer has grown so much even just in the last 4 years. The competition in Canada, it was your standard France, England, the United States, Japan. That was like in Brazil. That was like your big five. Now you have teams like Australia who could come in and win it. The Football Ferns in New Zealand always have a chance to upset. Spain has such a great, solid young team that they could really come in and make a splash. Don't sleep on those African teams because Nigeria could come in and just completely upset and topple and turn everything in Group A. I don't think they'd be beating France, but they could really go up to that second place spot over Norway and South Korea. There are so many teams that are seen as underdogs right now that could really just come in and completely dismantle everything. There was a recent friendly against the Netherlands and Australia, and I don't think anybody expected it to be the game that it was. And you know, the Netherlands, they have Leeke Martens, who was one of the FIFA Women's World Players of the Year. But the competition just surrounding that group is so immense that you don't even know if the Netherlands is going to make the group stage. This is probably going to be the best World Cup in the history of World Cups because of how much women's soccer has grown. You don't want just the same old, same old. I'm going to bring them back up again. It was exciting when Russia beat Spain because it was like, oh my God, this has never happened. This is crazy. You want that in women's soccer. You want that in the women's world. You want to see the craziness unfold, and that's what's going to happen in France.
Well said, Rachel. Let's get to rapid fire. I'm going to ask you a question or give you a topic. Try and answer it in 10 seconds or less. List me off the dark horses who could win the whole thing.
Jamaica, the Netherlands, New Zealand.
Okay. On that note, why should people watch the Jamaican, the Reggae Girls?
Because they're fun to watch. Who doesn't love Bunny Shaw and Chayna Matthews? That's going to be so much fun to watch.
Who's got the best kits in the entire group?
Nigeria and Jamaica.
Okay. All right, I'll throw in Australia as well as that one. I like the orange smattering, like the tie-dye look somewhat.
Norway has a nice one.
Okay, give me two X factors for the U.S. women's national team. Maybe players who weren't on the team in 2015 or just weren't major factors. You know, even the casual fan knows the Alex Morgans and the Kristen Presses, et cetera, et cetera. Give me two players we maybe don't know as much about who we should be watching for.
Crystal Dunn really wanted that spot in 2015 and missed out on it. She's playing out of position. She plays normally as a forward for the North Carolina Courage. Now she's playing as a left back. She's great on defense, which was totally unexpected, and she still gets up there in the attack, and she's so good at assists. Oh boy, another dark horse. Lindsay Horan, if she can stay healthy, she is going to completely control, and she is really great in a defensive and attacking midfield presence. So she is just an all-around player who can cover so much on the pitch. She's going to be a lot of fun. And she used to play pro in France.
Listeners, this is a podcast, so you can't see any video, but I immediately started fist pumping as soon as Rachel mentioned Lindsey Horan, Colorado native. Let's move on. Rachel, who's your favorite to win the Golden Boot, and who do you think will be the player of the tournament?
Oh my gosh, that's really hard. Sam Kerr, Golden Boot. What was the second part?
And then player of the tournament. So I think that's the Golden Ball, technically.
Oh God. Give me Amandine Henri for France.
Okay. And then which group is the group of death, and which two teams get out of the group of death?
Oh God. Group of death is probably Group B. This is a little bit out off the wall. I'm gonna say Germany and Spain over China.
Okay, and then who wins the whole thing? I think he kind of teased it earlier, but who ends up lifting the trophy at the end of the day?
France. Viva la France.
Alrighty then. Rachel, thank you very much for joining us. Listeners, we'll be right back with the roundtable talking some MLS and other stuff. We'll be right back. Welcome back, listeners, to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. It is time for the roundtable. Let me introduce my co-host. First, bringing back again Rachel McCrigger. Rachel, how are you?
Doing well, thanks.
And then, off of his exploits to the golf course, thanks to some precarious weather circumstances, Daniel Sperry. Dan, how are you doing as we close out the end of the spring sports equinox, and in particular looking at how the Dubs are doing with all the injuries they have against the Toronto Raptors?
Yeah, Dubs are interesting right now, man. I think Klay Thompson will play. He, like, unless his leg is broken in half, he usually plays. So I expect him to play. KD out is another, like, I wish we could get him back for a little bit sooner, but you know, they stole the road game. If they can hold out at home and play a good performance, I thought the Raptors played well above what they can actually do in game one. Game two was a little bit more like them. Warriors needed a little bit of extra from somewhere else to get that job done. But Warriors at home is a very different animal than in Warriors on the road and in Toronto with their atmosphere. Oracle is going to be lit. It is the last. If the Warriors, let's say the Warriors win out, I don't think they will. I still think it'll go to game six. But if the Warriors ended up winning out, these will potentially be the last two games in Oakland for the Golden State Warriors. Next year they'll be moving to San Francisco. Last two games guaranteed in Oakland. It is going to be absolutely lit and crazy in Oracle. Oracle has long been one of the best atmospheres and one of the best home court advantages and crowds in the NBA. And when it really comes down to it, that place is unlike any other. So it's going to be a lot of fun tomorrow night. It's been a fun series. Golfing was great today. I had a bad experience on Sunday with the way a certain course that I played kind of went in terms of timing and grouping and all that stuff. And it took 3 hours to play 9 holes. And I was very mad. And today it took like 3 hours to play like all 18. So I'm not mad. So it was great. I'm in a good mood today. It's warm. It's wonderful. And I'm ready to join and talk some soccer.
Excellent stuff, Dan. And hopefully that'll be the last two games for Klay Thompson at Oracle Arena, because he'll be signing with the Lakers. Totally not happening. The Lakers are doomed. But in any case, let's move on to some happier soccer stuff. We've got some roundtable stuff, MLS related and otherwise, and then a smattering of things to talk about when we get to pick-ems. But we will start north of the border. Toronto FC have signed Omar Gonzalez, previously of Liga MX with Atlas. He's a center back. You'll remember him from his time with the LA Galaxy. Also, maybe Toronto FC is just trying to troll U.S. national team fans, because now they have Jozy Altidore and Michael Bradley, two of the players most faulted by U.S. national team fans for the failures in Trinidad and Tobago that led to them not winning the World Cup. And then Omar Gonzalez, who committed the own goal in that game against Trinidad and Tobago as well. In any case, a veteran center back who came back through allocation. I'm not super optimistic about this signing, guys, primarily because I just think that all the issues they've been having at center back with Drew Moore, Lorenzo Simon, and Chris Mavinga, Omar Gonzalez is just another, they're all four of one kind, really. And so I obviously he brings a depth option. You know, he was never the fastest guy or the most athletic guy anyways. He was a good organizer. He obviously shut down things in the air. So he plays a different style of game, but I don't see how another 30-year-old plus center back on the team who's clearly over the hill, who's not super athletic, is really going to help them unless they just absolutely commit to the three-man back line and go 3-5-2, 5-3-2, and then just think having another guy in there is going to solve it. I think Omar Gonzalez can still play. I think he can still be a productive player in MLS, but just given all of his weaknesses and the existing weaknesses that Toronto FC has, that doesn't really solve their problem. This is still a team that if they're making the playoffs and doing anything towards winning a second MLS Cup, they're going to do it by winning games 3-2, not 1-0. Let's move into Ohio, Dan. FC Cincinnati has some news on the front office end. What's happening? What do you think? Tell us about it.
Well, I think it's finally the right move for FC Cincinnati. They have Jeff Birding has kind of relinquished his role as the general manager of the soccer team, and he has given that role to Gerard Nijkamp. I don't know. It's Dutch. I'm not too sure how to say it correctly, but this is a move that FC Cincinnati needed. They needed it way earlier, though, and that's, I think, what's frustrating with all of this. These are some quotes that he had said earlier that he this is a, I believe this is from a either a conference call it was a conference call that he had earlier in the week when they announced Gerard Nijkamp as their general manager and in charge of the soccer operations of the club. This is what he says. He says, we're certainly going to be smarter on the soccer. He's a soccer lifer. I've always known that if we were promoted to the first division, a new general manager was going to be required. I was blessed to have 20 years with the Bengals. I didn't have 20 years in professional soccer. He also made a joke. This is also in thanks to an article from FCCincinnati.com. It also says that he was better suited initially to find an NFL fullback rather than a soccer one. Why on earth was this guy, I've said this multiple times on this podcast, I won't make the rant too long, but why on earth was this guy making soccer decisions for a team and trying to build out a soccer roster? Why was somebody who doesn't know how to build out a soccer roster trying to build a soccer roster for an MLS team? He said he knew that if they got into MLS and once they moved up, they would need a new GM. So why didn't you get that from the get-go? That's what's frustrating with all of this, because now they're built with an entirely incomplete roster that has 8,000 defensive midfielders and like two forwards, two people who can actually score goals and two people who have a history of scoring goals over their career. And so now this team, they fired a coach because he was given a joke of a roster situation, and Birding admitted that he didn't know what he was doing building a roster. So why was he doing it? I mean, as I said, that is the most frustrating thing out of all of this. And in December, they hired somebody to make business decisions that have been with the union for 10 years plus. But, you know, he's not coming in there and saying, you probably should get a new GM. Someone had to have. And if Birding knew that he needed to do a GM, then he needed to step aside, get a new GM, have someone work over Cook and work with Cook, Alan Cook, Cook, however you say it, to build the roster correctly through the expansion draft, through pickups, through trades, through the draft, how to do all of that correctly. They've done most of it completely incorrect, and now they're in a situation where they're stuck. And I'm sure this guy gets it from putting together an academy. He's done it. He's got a good history of it and has done that in the Netherlands. But the biggest problem here is that he's doing it all too late. This guy should have been in the building 8 months ago before they even had one player on their MLS roster. And that's not, but they aren't. So now they're going to be playing behind the clock. I hope FC Cincinnati isn't a Toronto FC, but man, do they already look like what a Toronto FC was when they came into the league.
Dansbury spitting fire. Let's stay in the state of Ohio. Rachel, you're going to be our Columbus Crew correspondent on this one. Pipe Higuain officially out for the season, sustained an injury against the Colorado Rapids that ended up being a torn ACL, of which he has now had surgery. The Columbus Crew already had a very, very lengthy injury list, and it now just got longer, in addition to Zach Steffen no longer being with the club. Rachel, what does this mean for the Crew, and where the heck does Caleb Porter go from here?
So Caleb Porter has a bit of a conundrum on his hands because a lot of players are heading off to international duty as well. So he's a little bit bone thin here. He might have to start playing a couple of players in different positions. But I think more than anything, you're losing somebody with a veteran presence, somebody who's been around long enough, a great leader. That's going to really hurt Columbus. But it's going to be tough right now. But he's really going to have to dig deep, maybe sign some the equivalent to a national team replacement player, get some of the young guys in, maybe get some loanies back. It's going to be tough right now, but Caleb Porter just has to make do with what little he has. That injury list isn't getting shorter, but he needs to find a way to make it shorter, whether it be speeding up some recoveries for some minor injuries or what. But he needs to get his team going right now, because right now they're not doing too well on the injury front, and international call-ups, while it's great for those players, it's really going to hurt the crew.
Let's move on to some happier stuff. Dan, the United States men's national team U20 team had a fantastic result against France in their World Cup. What happened, and what do you think about it?
Yeah, today they were down 2-1. Sebastian Soto got a pair of goals. He opened the scoring. They went down 2-1 to a France team. They seem to be playing on the counter. That's how most of their goals came. Tim Weah played kind of I don't know if he necessarily played as a number 10 today, but man, he sure was making passes like he was a number 10 today. He threaded in some wonderful balls to Sebastian Soto to finish, threaded in the back line. This is a France back line that has Dan Axel Zagadou, they're Albin Lafont. These guys, if you look at transfermarket.com, they're three center backs that they had playing. Arguably someone can play left back, right back anyways. Within the France back line and their goalkeepers, arguably close to worth 100 million euros on transfer market. That's kind of what their market valuation and price is for these French prospects. And the U.S. attack, Sebastian Soto, Tim Weah, Richie Ledesma absolutely tore them apart today. The winner came on a thunderous effort from Sergiño Dest, the Ajax fullback, who blasted one. Lafont couldn't carry it. Ball popped out, and then New England Revolution homegrown player Justin Renex torched the back line and got through to get through that rebound and poke it home to give the U.S. Baby Nats, hashtag Baby Nats, the win against France, sending them to the quarterfinals of the U.S. Under 20 World Cup. I believe this is the third straight quarterfinal appearance for a U.S. U20 team. Very successful tournament for them so far. They had a good win against a Qatar team who really bunkered down and made it difficult for them. They lost the opener to Ukraine, but then they went back and played really well on that second leg. They went all out for it in the attack today, mainly because guys like Chris Durkin, a DC United homegrown player, and a few others were out with yellow card suspension. Chose to go with a little bit more mobile center back too, as Mark McKenzie set out for this one. But ultimately, Tab Ramos, as much crap as he gets, he really pulled all the right strings with the lineup today. They looked fantastic on the counter. They played the game the way they needed to get a result. They said, you know what, we might have an identifiable system. They kind of like to play very possession-oriented and out-possess and play beautiful soccer. That's kind of what they try to do, what they've tried to do all tournament today. They said, we're going to try and counter, play on the counter and, you know, kind of fast break you on France. And it worked. They get the win over a very talented, very highly touted French under-20 team, and they'll face Ecuador in the quarterfinals. So big shout out to all those kids who got it done today. Sebastian Soto with the two goals, Tim Weah pulling strings, Richie Ledesma also looked fantastic in the midfield, kind of filling in for a spot. He maybe wouldn't have been if Chris Durkin hadn't been out with the yellow card suspension.
Last roundtable item that we have going back to, formerly Columbus Crew, Zach Steffen, who officially joined Manchester City after the loan deal ended with Columbus, so effectively completing the transfer, is now going on loan like every single other player for Manchester City who Pep Guardiola doesn't love. And Steffen has landed with FC Dusseldorf, a team in the Bundesliga. Rachel McCrigger, what do you think about this being the first European opportunity for Zach Steffen after the transfer from MLS?
Hey, he might not be playing in Champions League or the Europa League, but still the Bundesliga is the Bundesliga. You're going to be playing against some great competition. I mean, he's going to be in goal if he starts. I would assume he is. But if he starts, he's going to be going up against guys like Thomas Müller, Margot Royce, Lars Stindl. I almost said Christian Pulisic, and now I'm sad. But he's going to go against a lot of really good name players, Lewandowski and Bayern. And so he's going to get some really good experience. And like I said, the Bundesliga is the Bundesliga. Europe's where you really want to be. And there's some really great talent there. It's a good place for him to really get going with his Europe adventure. And then see, hopefully, him in a Man City uniform sometime soon.
Good stuff, Rachel. Let's move on to the pick'ems, folks. We will start Wednesday, June 5th, 2019. It'll be the United States men's national team, the senior team, not the baby Nats, in a Gold Cup tune-up friendly. They'll be hosting Jamaica in Washington, D.C. at Audi Field. This will be at 7 p.m. Eastern on FS1. Dan, I'll throw it to you first. Who you got and why?
I'll go with the U.S. men's national team on this one. They're home. Jamaica has some really solid players. Leon Bailey, it will be in this squad, as well as a few others. Kamar Lawrence, Andre Blake, they're all familiar names. And this Jamaican team at the last Gold Cup, if you recall, went all the way to the final, lost against a U.S. men's national team that took care of business. However, it is a tune-up. These two teams are going to be looking for a lot of cagey stuff. They're going to be looking for certain looks. There's guys even on the U.S. roster who won't be actually in the Gold Cup, like Jackson Ewell and a few others. So I don't know how to go with the results on this one. I just want to see some good soccer. I'll go a 2-1 victory for the U.S. men's national team. I just think they have too much overall quality for this match compared to what Jamaica's got.
Rachel, who you got and why?
I think I'm going to go also with the U.S. men's national team. I like Dan's intake on how there's just too much quality. Love to see Andre Blake back in Jamaican colors, but I think the USA is going to take it. I think it's just going to be a 1-0 victory. I think it's going to be a bit of a scrappy win because I know Jamaica, they're very good with physicality. They don't let the heat get to them if the game is going to be hot because you never know what happens over here on the East Coast. So I think it's going to be an interesting match. Like Dan said, I just want to see some good soccer. I want to see some physical play. I want to see two teams getting tested, and I don't want it to be one-sided. So I hope it's a good match.
I'll take a 1-1 draw on this one. These tune-up friendlies, generally the first one is just so much squad rotation that there isn't, and, you know, coaches are just trying things out, so there's not really a coherent full 90-minute game plan. It's more about an exercise than actually trying to get a result, and it's also a bunch of guys getting together who maybe are still developing relationships. That makes for systematic discontinuities and for opportunities for individual players to do something on the offensive side of the ball. So I'll expect maybe, you know, a skill, maybe an unassisted goal from each side, and it'll end up being 1-1 at the end of the day. Let's move to this Friday up in Canada, Toronto FC and Omar Gonzalez hosting Sporting Kansas City. This will be at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+. Daniel Sperry, who you got and why?
This is going to be a war of attrition between the two. Toronto FC will be without pretty much everybody. Sporting Kansas City will be without mainly Christian Namath and Botan Barath. But Andre Fontas, Matt Beisler, and a few others should be potentially ready for this one on the back line. Sporting KC's front group should be okay. Sounds like Dursel will be coming back, as well as Daniel Shallowy. There's still plenty of good options for Sporting Kansas City in this one. I'll go with a draw here just because both teams will be missing a few key figures. Sporting will be without, obviously, Namath and Russell. Toronto FC will be without Josie, Michael Bradley, Omar Gonzalez as well, who was with the U.S. men's national team, unless I'm wrong there. Am I wrong there? I thought he was in the squad and stuff with the U.S. men's national.
Yeah, he is.
He is? Okay. So there's not a whole... Sorry, I'm going crazy. So there's not a whole lot there for either team. A draw seems like the more likely result. If anyone's going to be a winner, I think Sporting Kansas City might have enough quality to do it, but we'll see how it goes. I'll say 1-1 in this one.
I think the more interesting question might even be, Dan, who would win in like a pickup, like five-a-side futsal game between the players from both teams who are not, you know, let's say take everybody who's injured, everybody who's with their national team, make them healthy and fully fit, and then have those teams play in a futsal game with like rolling substitutions. Who wins that is probably more fun than what's going to happen at BMO on Friday night. In any case, let's move on to Saturday. This will be San Jose Earthquakes hosting FC Dallas. This will be at 3:30 p.m. Eastern. This will be on Univision and en Ingles in the Twitter sphere. Rachel, who you got and why?
I like San Jose on this little bit of a rolling streak that they have right now. I think Chris Wondolowski is like up to here and he just can't be stopped right now. So I think it'll be interesting to see if he can go off on FC Dallas and keep adding more to his total so nobody catches up to him like he caught up to Landon Donovan. So I think it'll be a good one. I think surprisingly, I don't think people would look at that match and be like, oh, this is going to be a interesting game to watch, but I think it's going to be one, and grab your popcorn because I think it's going to be a physical game.
Absolutely, and then we'll have the nightcap on Saturday is at 9 p.m. Eastern. It'll be the resurgent Colorado Rapids taking on Minnesota United FC. Minnesota losing just their first game ever at Allianz Field on this past weekend to Philadelphia Union. This will be on ESPN+. Guys, I'm taking the Rapids in this one. Minnesota has not looked good the last couple of weeks. You know, they had two losses in their double game week. Meanwhile, the Rapids had 4 points, including a tie with the aforementioned Philadelphia Union. They're figuring things out offensively, and Minnesota has not looked as strong defensively. I think Kai Kamara versus Aiko Parra is going to be a fantastic matchup to see on the other side, but this is all going to be about the wing play, and I will take a Sam Nicholson, you know, on the wing, and, you know, maybe an Andre Shinyashiki or a Diego Rubio over whoever the fullbacks Minnesota is going to line up. Maybe an Eric Miller in his first time returning to Dick's Sporting Goods Park since being traded for the aforementioned Sam Nicholson. But I'll take the Rapids 2-1 in this one. Not going to be a lot of defense, lots of chances, and it should be another crazy game at DSG Park. And then we'll move on to Sunday for another U.S. national team game. This time, the Yanks will be hosting Venezuela. This will be at Nippert Stadium. I believe the first ever time that the U.S. national team has played at Nippert. Certainly the first time since FC Cincinnati's come into the fold. This will be at 2 p.m. Eastern on Fox, Big Fox, Bart Simpson Fox. Dan, I'll throw it to you. Who you got between the U.S. national team and the Fighting Joseph Martinez's?
The Fighting Joseph Martinez's actually have a lot of freaking quality in that squad. I think this will be a tough one for the U.S. team. It is good that they get a very tough test before heading into their group. I think this is going to be tight. I'll go with a draw here. I think it'll be 2-2. But I wouldn't be surprised if maybe Venezuela kind of shocked the U.S. and got a win. This is a strong Venezuelan side, especially when it comes to their midfield and their attack. You know, U.S. men's national team, there'll be some very familiar faces for them, just like, you know, Rolf Felcher from the Galaxy is there, Yanjo Herrera and Jefferson Savarino are also in that midfield, and then, of course, Joseph Martinez in there. There's still plenty of quality up top for them, and a very difficult guy to deal with in Solomon Rondon for any center back. So we'll see how this one goes, but I'll go with a draw on this one. This will be definitely U.S.'s hardest match before facing Panama in the Gold Cup group finale.
Rachel?
I'm going to go with a 3-1 win for Venezuela. I think, like Dan said, there's a lot of quality on that team, but I think another aspect is that there is a lot of guys that the United States just hasn't really played against. They don't play a lot of guys who play in Colombia, and there's a lot of a guy who plays in Italy. There's some who play in England in the first and division, and second division. So I think that there's just a lot of different wild card factors that the United States, sure that you might have video, but there's only so much video can do for you. I'm going to take Venezuela on here. They don't care about the heat. They don't care about pushing people around. So I think it's going to be a tough test. And I think Venezuela might be coming on top.
I really love this matchup, to be honest. I think this is a perfect tune-up for the men's national team going into the Gold Cup. You know, Venezuela is going to be, you know, in a mid to low block probably and is going to be looking to counter. And that's what the U.S. is going to face, you know, probably outside of maybe Costa Rica, and then probably Mexico and Jamaica. So, you know, anything that they're going to deal with in the group stage and certainly in that first knockout stage, this is going to be an excellent exercise. And it's going to be an excellent exercise for a defense that is still very much in flux, because most of the teams in CONCACAF who are going to be bunkering against the U.S. do not have the Golden Boot winner from MLS from last year in Jose Martinez. I'll take a 1-1 draw on this one. I think the U.S. certainly has enough quality to break down Venezuela and eventually get a goal from the options that they have offensively, but I'll take Jose Martinez probably scoring on the counter. It'll end up being 1-1. That does it for us for all of our main content. Rachel, ladies first on last words. Where can people find you on the Twittersphere? And do you have any last words for the show?
So on Twitter, I'm Rachel McCrigger, 2 A's, not just one. I'm the A-E-L at the end, not just the E-L. Look out for my work for the World Cup coming up in just 3 days. A lot of stuff coming on Last Word on Soccer. We've got some guys helping us out with some Canadian national team coverage, and we're going to take a look at Jamaica a little bit since they're our lovely friends in CONCACAF. So be on the lookout for that. It's going to be a fun World Cup. I'm very excited, and keep supporting women's soccer because Lord knows we need it.
Great. Well said. Dan, where can people find you on the Twitter sphere? Do you have any last words, and tell our listeners about Golden Goal Press?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Sperry94. I don't have any last words, surprisingly. I got my rant out with the Jeff Birding thing, which has been a rant for weeks anyway. So nothing new there, but I mean, I guess if I'm going to say anything, please dive into the Women's World Cup. This is one of my favorite tournaments. I love watching it. I will hopefully get to go out to one of the watch parties in downtown KC for the women's national team match. There's a lot of great soccer in this one. There's a lot of really cool stories. And this tournament is awesome, and it's always one of my favorites. I think at times it's more entertaining than the Men's World Cup, especially at the group stage. So, I look forward to this one every year. I'm excited it's finally, or every year, every time it happens. I'm excited it's here. I hope the girls, in red, white, and blue take it home for us, again, and that'd be awesome. And, you know, I'll have my eyes peeled to the TV for that one. So, with that much said, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Golden Goal Press, who is the best choice for you to get custom shirts, hats, mugs, and other items for just yourself or your organization. You can check out their amazing products at a fraction of the price of other places at goldengoalpress.com.
Listeners, you can follow me on Twitter at LWSMattPollard. Check us out at LastWordOnSoccer.com, at LastWordSC across all social media platforms. And if you want to get in touch, LastWordSC@gmail.com. Wherever you get your podcast, just search Last Word on Sports or Last Word Soccer Club Radio, and you'll find us and a bunch of other great stuff that our buddies here at the Last Word Radio Network are putting out. I'll just echo the things that you both said about the Women's World Cup. I have a snorri from every single Men's World Cup and every single Women's World Cup, basically since I was about 10 or 11, in which I, being a soccer person, brought someone who was not a soccer person into the fold, informing them about stuff, watching the game at somebody's house, going to a bar once I was finally 21, and converting that person into soccer, or at least getting them a better understanding of the game. I've had someone this year with the Rapids, ironically, who is mainly a baseball fan, who has jokingly said that they have had more fun in Rapids losses during the losing streak than they have with 90% of the baseball games that they've ended up watching. Dan, feel free to comment on that if you want, but in any case, that person saw, if I can get a friend who is a baseball fan to see the light with the Rapids during the end of the Anthony Hudson era to get into soccer, then certainly you can do that with a World Cup played in fantastic stadiums in France with the women's national team. I already have booked 2 of the group stage games for the ladies. I'm taking a friend to one of the 2 soccer bars in Denver, and we are watching the game. They're vaguely familiar with soccer, vaguely familiar with the players on the women's national team, and I look forward to informing them about all the fantastic things that Haran and Pew are able to bring to them from Colorado. In any case, thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group or your team or yourself for the Women's World Cup at roughneckscarves.com. Thank you very much for listening to us, folks. We'll see you next week.